This is the ninth episode of A Book I Love on Women Writing Architecture, where we talk about a specially chosen beloved text and consider how it could belong to architecture. I'm Helen Thomas, an editor at Women Writing Architecture, and today we're talking about Anna Singh's book, The Mushroom at the End of the World. But before I introduce everyone, let me tell you where we are. There are four of us gathered around the visitors' table at the front of the Frauen Kultur Archive in Graubünden in Chur. We're sitting between the front door and a big reading room behind, with readers passing through. Founded in 1997, the Women's Archive and Library is an amazing resource for research, with a large collection of rare books and pamphlets from the 1970s into the present, oral histories and other feminist publications. Some of these are highlighted in a collection that can be explored on womenwritingarchitecture.org. So this is a great place to explore Anna Singh's book. It's a treasure trove, like her writing, of interconnected stories, theories, ideas and actions. It was chosen by Jae Hee Shin, an editor at Women Writing Architecture and a Korean architect in Switzerland. Jae Hee has invited some of her friends. Paul Gegruchius, who grew up in South Africa, is an architect based in Zurich, who himself chose Paul Preciado's Testo Junkie for the fourth episode of A Book I Love. Jimin An is a Korean architect. In 2017, she founded AM Architects in Lucerne. Chinese-American anthropologist Anna Singh lives in California and first published her book, The Mushroom at the End of the World, on the possibility of life in capitalist ruins in 2015. As soon as it came out, its optimistic disruption of positivist and modernist assumptions about the role and presence of humans in the world became a touchstone for discussions in many disciplines. These start, for example, with the relationships between humans and the natural environment, but also the local and global systems of exchange and value that they have created, which embrace the unexpected and unanticipated but vital interdependencies and connections between things. Commentary on the book has been made by figures as renowned as Bruno Latour and Ursula Le Guin. Jae Hee, now you are bringing Anna Singh's book into the world of architecture. Can you tell us why it is a book that you love and how you came to choose it?
Thank you for the question, Helen. After deciding to become an independent architect last summer, I was given about 6 months to think about position. And rather than jumping into existing competitive situation, I want to question myself what kind of question need to be asked in our world. And then during that time, I often stay in the farmhouse next to beautiful Speicher in Oberaargau, which was close to nature than Zürich in Graubünden, where I was previously based. There was a forest right next to the farmhouse, and I went for strolls in the forest almost every day with a dog missing. It was just around the time of autumn, so I was able to find a really a lot of different mushrooms. At the time, I slowly remember our book, The Mushroom at the End of the World by Anna Singh, which Jimmy's partner Philip had lent to me. This book, which traces the product chain Matsutake mushroom, provides a rich explanation of a single example in a complex way. We are usually taught in the school to acquire information in a hierarchical way based on one big idea and one manner. This book had many small stories that is connected to each other but are independent. What is surprising is that by collecting these small pieces and patching them together, readers are able to participate in this huge complex by following and imagining the action of this patching piece with a full of curiosity.
Well, thank you, Helen and Jackie, for inviting us, Jimin and I, to the podcast. I also was very happy to come across. I read this book in German, so maybe I have a slight different experience when reading it. I will say I understand where you come from with these small different stories, but also within these small different stories, different people and different like almost a fragmented perception of what it is, for instance, to be a foreigner in a country. Everyone has these different experiences, and I could definitely relate to that and also observe it in a contemporary way. What is happening also in Switzerland? We have these discussions about foreigners and their position in kind of the Swiss context that made me think a lot. What about you, Jimin?
Thank you, and also thanks for having me and inviting me to this podcast. I came across this book when I was doing this course, Urban and Territorial Design at ETH, and I kind of got into it under that sort of a perspective of kind of how this was a book about following this mushroom to kind of unravel various aspects and so many different topics that this book covers. But as I really got into it, it is true, like I could really relate to some of those, the what happens at Open Ticket and how these people end up there and things like this. And I could really relate to my childhood and what my parents went through, because we immigrated to New Zealand as I was a child, and how you kind of, it's not so much like an integration, or it's not limited to such strict binaries of whether you're integrated or not, but it's almost like this third kind of a condition that you find yourself in as an immigrant in another country, and you find your ways and own kind of ways to navigate through this new place. And that part of the story really resonated with me.
That's so interesting that both of you pick up this idea of being a stranger or being an immigrant, because that's really, it's not a way that I engage with the book at all, so I find that super fascinating. I mean, and I also like the way you talked, Jean, about how you first encountered the book, because I encountered it when we started Women Writing Architecture, because we were giving little talks about why, you know, what it's about. And it was also at the time when there was the Berta Rahms Pavilion that was in a mushroom farm. So there was that an exhibition and a whole idea of collecting books connected to that. So the idea of the mushroom was in the air. It was a couple of years ago, 2021, I think. I don't know if that's when you were studying. But this idea of the interconnectedness of things, which I guess is related to the idea of being a stranger. Things aren't just silos or single interpretations, but what she's proposing is that one thing can have many, many multiple meanings that are interconnected, and sometimes they're separate and disconnected. And I think, for me, I find it really interesting when she's talking about being in the forest in Oregon and all the different... I mean, you talked about Open Ticket, but which I think is in Oregon, isn't it? And she talks about all the different constituents and, as you were saying, the making of different worlds connected to what harvesting the mushroom meant in Vietnam or Korea. And but then also people who were white working class veterans, and if it's in America. So you have all these really disparate groups, the same aims together in this ruined landscape.
Yeah, this is so we have maybe some similar experience, even though we have a complete different background. For me, was fascinating. The concept was like patchiness, because small piece and with a different color and size, influence and affect each other. Because actually, Anna's mother came from China to United States. At the time, she could not really express herself and her culture and background, and she had to accept American culture like me at the beginning and my study at ETH. Actually, Anna also exists herself like a patch. I think is in different is and maybe like a reframing how we framing about the situation, how we make the story. For me, was this idea of patchiness. I'm sure positive thing. And this increased the passion and consciousness of some of another patchiness in our friend, promotes them to situate themselves more actively. And it's kind of our passion, what we are doing in Women Writing Architecture. So it was so interesting to see how she used this act of noticing and then used this different notion. And I really think of a lot power, because when I studied with a Swiss professor at school, I always really try to learn this culture, not showing my background, what I learned. And power always, it was first time in my study that I could be like connected and I could express my idea, and because power always come in. Chehi talked to me about this thing, and then he always tried to some this kind of different idea connected. So it was so touched when I read this book. And
no, I also remember, you know, collaborating with you and EDH on projects. And I think also what is reflected in the book as well, is it's really depending on perspective, on if your work is appreciated in the first place or not, or valued at all. And I think this comes up with two separate like labors. The one would be that of the size of the mushroom, and then that of from whom these mushrooms derive. Then, for example, someone like Jehi arriving in Switzerland and then doing something, it's a different quality of work. It's not necessarily the end result, the trade value that is important, but then the kind of almost the storyline, and then the path to this work. And then I think I really like that. I wrote it down and I can't find my notes anymore. But it made me reflect that a lot of people, and it's maybe also an intellectual question, they don't end up understanding the first version of that work. And that's a loss for them, especially. Especially now in this very capitalist society. I almost sometimes even forget about that perspective, and I have to come back to it sometimes. But then, you know, working with Jehi or seeing other people from different backgrounds and what they create, you come back to that perspective again.
Do you mean the book, a different kind of work?
No, I definitely mean described in the book.
Oh, okay. The work of collecting the mushrooms. Because also I was reading, when you were speaking, I was reading about the actual book as a work itself. I just find that this idea of lots and lots of stories, it's a really interesting, compelling idea. And I think she does make these nice structures. She has different kinds of writing, different kinds of story. But I also find it too rich. I find it, like, trying to read the book, not in one go, obviously it's too long, but even reading it consecutively over several days, it's really hard to remember and take in everything. I find it doesn't have a sync, because it doesn't have a single narrative, but it's many different threads. I don't know if that's kind of what you're saying, that you start off with one perspective and then you bring other ones in, and it changes the meaning, and then you come back to the original meaning and you understand it more. Is that kind of what, I don't know, that was my understanding of what you were saying, that you can't see it as one thing. And I think that's quite interesting. That there isn't a single meaning of it, or a single... Because most books you can kind of... I don't know, maybe I'm just talking about myself, but I can picture it as an idea in my head and I'm in that world. But with this, I couldn't do that.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think I kind of went back and read it again several times also.
Me too.
And in the end, she also says, like, this is a book without an ending or a particular structure. There are 20 chapters, all kind of dealing... very interesting topics, but there isn't a very clear kind of a structure that you can follow. And I think it's so similar to the things that she's describing, in terms of, like, there are so many complexities that exist in this world, whether it's in the terms of global economy or supply chains or the assemblages and patchiness. And I think it's in some ways representative of that. And because when I was invited to this podcast, I was like, okay, so how would I summarize this book? And it's like, there isn't really a single way to summarize it. And I think it is important to kind of carry that complexity and not to simplify it and to try and summarize it in a few sentences. And I think the kind of the way the chapters are laid out represents that. So I kind of became a little bit less stressed. I was
it is quite
maybe
stressful.
That is what she wants it to be, you know.
Yes, and then at the end, there'll be certain chapters that that stay in my mind longer than others. And that's also why it kind of requires rereading. Maybe you didn't understand something that the first time around. And then wherever you begin the next time, you get a clearer or a different understanding.
Definitely.
After all.
Sometimes out of this book, especially out of lots of books, it happens. But the scalability chapter is often taken out of the book and used... for discussion, because it's a single idea and it's so relevant and so interesting. She talks about plantations and agriculture, that, like, one of the problems is plantation is vast, and so it can start from something small and be scaled up and then take over different huge areas of the world and then be global. But with something like the mushroom, the matsutake, it needs a ruined and very specific environment, so you can't pre-make it. It's accidental. And But what's interesting about what you're saying is that single elements of it can have an identity, but together it's something much more complex.
It's so interesting that we have something similar feeling and what we get to think. So I saw in this book that she mentioned many different other authors and notions, and I saw in her experiment the intention to make the writing style diverse as well. But what I fascinated actually, one, she her way of speaking and in interview and her way of writing or like doing like a field work, somehow it's all like not very separated thing, and it's a like kind of feeling when the heavy rainy come and after that is full of moisture in the forest and something I could see a lot of things. And so the brain and body and way of talking and the feeling is somehow it resonate together, and that's why we could really this complex thing can start to think or question. I don't know how can I say it because they're so complex.
I just got one thought that I was having as you're speaking, that I think it's because she, instead of theorising, like, so I mean, in a way it's a bit like Foucault, the depth of research that she does, but instead of theorising like Foucault, she makes analogies and metaphors, so it's much more associational for the reader, which is maybe why it's so much more difficult to get a single idea. I don't know.
I think yeah, exactly this. She accept that the idea when the first time start and the when she start the field work is always different, and she accept this giving up the first idea or like let her to go diving. And I think it's also like this and that it takes time to find the right way, and then she finalized, because we need like which kind of question should be asked, and then she care of the feeling of the readers, and she care of them the people who read, and then her way of experimenting somehow come together. Do you agree with my observation? I don't know.
I do agree. I also think that with such a book, oftentimes the motivations behind the book, they're oftentimes very clear. But with also the, again, as Jimin stated, that there's no one clear argument in this book made, then of course it's harder then to answer that question.
I don't know, maybe Jimin can come with a better answer to this question and I'll come back. I'm very sorry.
But maybe that's just about our book.
That's a good question. And I think it goes through various different topics, but it always comes back to the mushroom, and the mushroom is the subject. And I really like that aspect, that the shift is kind of being focused. We're so focused on the social dynamics from a human point of view, but then she really always brings it back to the mushroom. And I think that kind of shift in perspective from a human-centric view, I don't know if that's answering the question.
Also, just what pops up into my mind is what was happening around me when reading this book. And like the political things happening currently, and almost this aggressive distancing from ecology and climate awareness. And this book criticizing capitalism in a not a very aggressive way, but almost the opposite happening right now, where everything is so malinformed and unexplained, and then having this book being so almost so serene and peaceful, just like walking through a forest. It's almost like she captures that experience, but then the arguments also being very well justified. I hope that we get back to that kind of mindset of arguing like the book does, without it coming off as weak. It's not weak, it's just very well controlled, these emotions.
But at the beginning you shortly comment about globe and local, and I think this book is really related about the architecture and what we try to make. And then because in the woman writing architecture also is kind of digital publishing, and it connected in with the internet, and also is doing also Tisch zwei Verein with the people in Ananda, and something similar a background, but try to in personal way with local people somehow, because in the local we can also see the global layer, and then also in global actually what we talk about is all local somehow. This thing touch this book. because the whole the idea is some, I don't know.
I think in a way the local is the global for her. But
yes.
I mean, things I found, really interesting was her way of talking about littering in the forest, which I think is quite fundamental to the ideal environment for the mushroom. Is it is being ruined is fundamentally important. So it's something that would seem to be seen to be a wasted landscape. And so I find that really interesting. And it is a very positive and I think, as you were saying, Paul, very optimistic book in a way. It's calm and it's proposing a way that we can survive in this ruined landscape or this ruined world that we have. And I think going back in a way to the idea of the stranger that we were talking about at the very beginning is that she asked the question, what litter is? What is littering in the forest? And she questions this idea of a moral stance, like the foresters and or one section of society but complaining about the chocolate wrappers or the tin cans or the remnants of fires that are left. And you know, it just caused me to ask in a way, you know, what is litter? Is it a motorway litter or a field of wind turbines? You know, which is the most littering on the landscape? A motorway or a field of turbines or a barkless tree or a chocolate wrapper? I mean, all of those could be defined as some sense of trashing or litter or negative impact upon an environment. But there's one part where she's talking about smell, which I also think is quite interesting, connected to the idea of litter, because that's something also very, very cultural. And the mushroom itself has a strong smell, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. I think she talks about the association of the smell and what that means to different people. I think that is a connection of global and local, but it's very, very cultural. You know, what the smell of the mushroom, I guess to some people, it means it's the smell of money. To some people, it's the smell of their childhood. This whole idea, I think, that you brought up, Paul, at the beginning of relative understanding of things. Mm-hmm. It's really beautifully presented in a calm way. So something that's really quite terrifying, i.e. our trash world, is being presented in a calm way as something that maybe we can be positive about.
Yeah, that it's very intriguing for the senses, because you'd smell what she was describing, even if they were unpleasant smells. The mushroom wasn't something that she necessarily liked smelling or even eating. She didn't even know how cooking, and then coming back to that mushroom also meant rediscovering maybe a past that she didn't know because of her upbringing as a very American woman. I think I also slightly come across these, but it's even more complicated for me, because growing up I never really understood the origin of my own surname, and I'm still not really interested, but somehow this book motivates me to maybe take a glance at certain things in my history, which would be Lithuania. Also, maybe my reconnection with South Africa in a way, but also what habits I had there. We would do a lot of hikes. We would do mushroom picking. I remember even the names of the forests and also what trees there were. Again, it's almost like this choreography that you rediscover. And I think this book has a lot of these sensual, these things that touch your senses.
I had a feeling, actually, at the beginning I thought it's a more optimistic way, but and when I read it again, actually, she wants to really try to change the world, and that's why she cares so many things, how people get the feeling there. She wants to give a motivation. Everyone could participate in this connection or like a patch together. I think this sense, because there are so many different levels of emotion I got, because at the beginning it was so sad to accept our world is a ruin, was the first frustration for me. And after that I accept it. Yeah, it was so emotional. I don't know how I can describe it. But what I touch, actually, she said, and the frustration and sadness are good, because it showed that it's really truly desiring something. And it's kind of natural way of to find or change the world. And also, it's somehow associated about the glossary work, or like reframing the definition of the word or redirection the meaning positively. Because somehow the old-fashioned method and existing vocabulary terms can contain new dream and new approach. And so we need to really recognize reality at the same time.
Yes, I think so. And you mentioned briefly before, like, about architecture. A lot of architects, I think, would share the same view to how do we build sustainably, which is an oxymoron in itself. Like, to build is unsustainable and it has so many CO2 emissions. And I think it is, in some ways, like, how to work as an architect is almost like a matsutake mushroom, like, in this capitalist ruin of, like, this world that we're left with now. How do we build sensibly? How do we provide shelter for the population and in this kind of situation? And it's often quite overwhelming, and it does make you feel hard, just like, are we even in the right profession? As, you know, how do we navigate through this issue? I think, yeah, I also kind of, that resonated with me also, like, this condition of capitalist ruins, which a lot of us find ourselves in. How do we move forward? And the book really offers this glimpse of hope, you know, and there is, like, this possibility of renewal.
Thank you for bringing in the issue of architecture, because that's one of our intentions. And I was actually going to ask you, how do you connect the book to architecture? Because you studied it in an architecture course, didn't you?
I did an MIS at ETH about 2 years ago, I think.
And how did you use the book?
It was related a lot to urban ecology and kind of in terms of, like, the territorial design and how the focus of our design projects should put the non-human species and as the subject, for example, like the water as the subject, or the mushrooms, or the plants and insects. And because as architects, you always think about, like, kind of in terms of in the urban realm, the focus is on the human and how humans interact and move through the space. But it was really interesting when you start thinking from a perspective of an insect, you know. It's just, okay, so what kind of lighting conditions do they need? Or what kind of lighting conditions that makes hedgehogs feel safe at night to cross their habitat? And how many meters do you need to have the ponds so the frogs can migrate, and how you don't break that kind of, disturb that route for them? And it also really relates to how we design, kind of an eye-opener for me to try and design not just from the perspective of doing something good for people, but also the non-humans.
Also, my practice, sometimes it's almost like ecology is like this checklist.
Yes.
And it comes off as so forced, when in fact, I think a lot of architects should be asked to take a more practical approach. Like, what would you find to be something or a motivation or an argument that is ecological, but also beneficial, not only to humans and to your project?
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about these points
mm-hmm.
that you have to make, but it's almost like creating something out of it, something that would actually sound in a different context very depressing,
mm-hmm.
but in this book sounds very harmonious.
Yes.
And peaceful. It actually then is once again very motivating to
mm-hmm.
go back and approach it in a different way, not
mm-hmm.
just with money.
And maybe I want to once again say about power of the reframing. Amazingly positive and viable approach by Anna Ching. I really impressed a lot. And I read one interview between Anna Ching and Sara. She commented about the film Fiction, and she talked about how impressive it was that to encourage the coal miner who didn't speak English, the director offered them watermelon. And this scene, it was actually capitalistic for me, and one could criticize it for, like, manipulating the psychology of the workers. However, she reframed it with the wonderful idea that many people are working together to create a single product, and beyond the various difference in language and culture and nationality. This observation for me was so much like many questions. And then I think maybe we could really start question a lot and then connect it together and then maybe situate ourselves like on patch and influence and then affect each other and more actively. And that I hope what I want and also connected in human writing architecture.